G'day everybody, thank you for joining us for yet another Stand-Up podcast. My name is Wilmer Ferreira, COO of Stand-Up Systematic Solutions. I'm joined in studio by Radomir van Mark, who heads up Systematic Solutions. We're going to be talking to Radomir today about the SA equity landscape and our team's view around markets and stocks into 2025, as well as the current positioning in the funds. The funds we're going to be talking about is the Stand-Up Enhanced Multi-Style Equity Fund, which is a SA-only equity fund, and the Stand-Up Equity Fund, which is a combined fund of SA equity and global equity. We're also going to get his views on a couple of topical themes playing out in the market at the moment. If we look back to last year, SA equities had a fairly decent return, low double digits. It was a year of two halves. Before the election in May last year, markets only returned 1.5%. And then post the election outcome and the formation of the GNU, markets returned 12%, spearheaded specifically by SA Inc. stocks. So let's get into it. The first question, Radomir, is around the equity composition within the JSE. If we look over the past two decades, we've seen a massive delisting in the SA equity market. What normally sparks is the shrinking stock pool hinders the ability to uncover prospering stocks in the market, and people fear that the SA equity market is getting too small. Briefly talk us through your approach to portfolio construction and risk management in this evolving landscape.
Yeah, thanks, Wilmer. So I think a couple of points maybe to elaborate on. The first is that the vast majority of the delistings that we've seen on the JSE have been in the really small cap space. So in the tail of the listings on the JSE. So those delistings do not really impact the ability for us to build a scalable investment solution for our clients. In addition to that, we also apply a liquidity filter at the start of our process to get rid of another portion of the more illiquid stocks. So we're looking at about 60 to 70 stocks that are truly investable in the SA market and that can build a scalable fund. But within the context of a shrinking universe, I think what's important to point out as well is our process is designed to be able to build an outperforming portfolio no matter how many stocks are in the benchmark or in the index. And the reason for that is simply that given any universe of stocks, you can give us 20 stocks, you can give us 100 stocks, our three lenses of evaluating every stock through its quality, in other words, how profitable the company is, its valuation, how expensive the company is, and its growth prospects, allows us to always know which half of the universe we like and which half we don't like. So you can give us 20 stocks and we'll know, will tell you which 10 of the stocks have the best quality, value, and growth dimensions. In addition to the reality of doing a relative stock picking, we're also able to control the amount of active risk in a sheath around the benchmark that we are measured against. So that means that we're always in full control of the amount of risk that we take in the portfolio, no matter what the listing profile looks like on the exchange.
Thanks, Radomir. So from that, I take the SA equity market doesn't provide a constraint to you at the moment from a stock picking perspective, from an active perspective. So you're still comfortable constructing a portfolio that should outperform the SA equity market. Now that we've established that, let's quickly move to portfolio positioning. How are you currently positioning into 2025, especially from a sector perspective?
So we are positioned, and again, we look at every stock in the benchmark through the three lenses of its quality, its value, and its growth. And the stocks that tick all three boxes, so they are basically at the intersection of quality and value and growth, are stocks that we call best-in-class stocks. And stocks that tick none of the boxes, so they are low quality, expensive, and with no growth, we call worst-in-class. And we'll always be buying the best-in-class stocks. And at the moment, as we are positioned, we are overweight the financial sector. We are actually more overweight insurance companies than banks, but overweight both insurance and banks. And we are underweight the resources sector. And within the resources sector, We're slightly underweight gold, but we are massively underweight the platinum group metals. Now, if you look into the reasons behind that, the reality is that the resource sector is under pressure. And you can see that, especially with the majority of the gold counters in the market not being able to convert the high spot gold price to profitability. And most of the gold counters, and the reason why they are in worst in class is they intend to spend and invest their cash balances on ineffective CapEx and on expansionary projects. And most of the time, these turn out to be non-value accretive. On the platinum group side, platinum group metal side, I think we are also aware of the reality that fossil fuel and combustion engine cars are making a significant comeback. And the reality is that on the electric vehicle side, the vehicles that make use of battery electricity don't make use of any of the platinum group metals. So we're seeing a bit of a rally at the moment in the platinum group stocks. But at the moment, it seems to us as if this is mostly driven by short-term sentiment. We're not seeing any of the fundamentals change yet. And the robustness of our process means that we will never call the tops and we'll never be able to call the bottoms. But if these market moves turn into long-term structural trends supported by the fundamentals, if the platinum group market companies are able to convert the platinum price to profitability, if it converts into earnings growth, and if it doesn't affect the valuation too much, we will start to buy into those PGMs through time, and we will be through the cycle catching the correct investment opportunities.
Thanks, Rademan. I think I mentioned it at the start around SA Inc. performing particularly well post the formation of the GNU, and it's always been for equity investors in South Africa, it's been a big thing, the trade-off between SA Inc. shares. So those are shares that are deriving most of their earnings from South Africa, and typically that would be your financials, your retail companies, versus rand hedge stocks that have got rand dollar or rand foreign exposure. They're the dual listed stocks or stocks that earn their money outside of South Africa. And there's always this big trade-off between, are you long SA Inc. stocks or are you long rand hedge stocks? So from a positioning perspective going into 2025, are you long SA Inc. and rand hedges? And maybe give us a reason why you positioned in either one of those.
So, at the moment, we are slightly overweight SA Inc. stocks versus rand hedges. Our process is dynamic, and as the market evolves, we will adjust our portfolio. The reason why we are long SA Inc. stocks and financials in particular is that these companies are stable. They've got fantastic balance sheets. They're highly profitable, and there's still some growth prospects, and they're decently valued. So it's not a call on the rand or a view on the government of national unity. It's truly a bottom-up stock picking, sticking to the fundamentals that result in us being slightly overweight essaying. But I think an important point to perhaps also add here is that in our view, it is nigh impossible to call the big macro return drivers correctly, such as what is the rand going to do over the next 6 to 12 months. And so the way that we handle that reality is that we actually neutralize our portfolio to these big macro drivers. Practically, what that means is that we will always be overweight some rand hedges and underweight other rand hedges, and we'll be overweight the high quality, decent valuation and growth rand hedges, and we'll be underweight the expensive, low quality and low growth rand hedges. And by following this approach of neutralizing the macro risk in the portfolio, we are only taking bets and risks in dimensions where we have an edge, which is bottom-up stock picking, and we are neutralizing and managing the risks where we believe it's impossible to make a forecast, such as what the rand is going to do over the next 6 to 12 months.
Rademan, I think that's a very pragmatic approach when it comes to constructing an equity portfolio, because as we know, South Africa and other emerging markets are mostly takers of global macro events and the risk associated with this. So neutralizing for those risk, takes the guessing out of the portfolio construction. You just focus on stock picking. Thanks for that. You did mention in when you talk through financials and when you talk through resources around some of your stock picks. Maybe give us your current top pick within the fund and a couple of reasons or indicators that are pointing you towards that positive position.
I guess maybe I sounded too bearish on the resources sector. There are a couple of absolute gems in the resources sector, and one of our top holdings is, in fact, Harmony Gold. Now, Harmony has generated significant positive cash flow, free cash flow. It's generated $10.4 billion of free cash flow due to the record gold prices. And its strong operational performance and the grade of the gold that it's currently mining. The company is trading on a forward PE of only 6 with an ROE of 30%. And we see Harmony in particular show more discipline than in the past. You know, Harmony's balance sheet has moved to a net cash position of 7 billion rand. And we, to be honest, we haven't actually seen gold companies without gearing for many, many years. So there are some absolute best-in-class stocks within the resources sector. And then if I look at an SA Inc. stock in AVI, which is one of our top picks, AVI has got the highest quality score in our universe, and it is recognized as one of the highest quality companies on the JSE. It's got arguably the most respected CEO in South Africa from an operational perspective, and the company is consistently producing high returns on capital with high earnings quality, which means that the company is generating a lot of cash. You know, AVI continues to surprise the market with its ability to eke out improved profit margins from what seems to be already efficient businesses. And so we think the company is still fairly priced and with strong growth prospects. Given its high quality, it's one of our top picks and one of the best potential alpha generators in the fund.
Great. Just listening to the last couple of answers that you gave, I think there's a misconception in the market that stock picking or bottom-up fundamentals is not important for a systematic or multi-style process or fund. Would you agree that that's a misconception? Because I think sometimes people think that multi-style is blending different styles and the stock positioning is a consequence of the style view, whereas what I'm hearing from you is that stock picking is at the essence of what you do.
Absolutely a misconception. And we are very much bottom-up active stock pickers. And we look at the fundamentals of every stock through the three lenses of quality and value and growth. Where we are different is the way that we approach this problem of active management. And we approach this problem of active management like engineers. And so if you look at the spectrum of active managers on the range of art versus science, then at the one extreme, and I'm going to use an analogy, you would have a fund manager that constructs his portfolio like it's a ball of clay, and he moves the portfolio around based on his insight, his emotions, and how he feels the portfolio should look like a ball of clay, so very much an art. At the other end of the spectrum is where we sit, where we, and the analogy I want to use is that we make our investment decisions like a Rubik's Cube. So every single one of our investment decisions run on specified rails so that it takes the emotion out of the process, and we are always in control of what our portfolio looks like, and we know exactly why we constructed the portfolio to look like that. So very much an engineering approach to bottom-up stock picking.
Right, thanks, Rodimo. I think let's quickly change tact a bit away from SA equity and general equity and more into like large global themes that are playing out. And the one I want to touch on is tech and AI. We know it's been dominating headlines globally and in the US, and it's specifically been driving global equity returns, again, coming from the US. And what you would have heard from Rodimo in the first couple of questions is that he's got a deep fundamental knowledge and understanding that fundamentals drive markets. But also in the previous question, he mentioned he approaches the investment process from an engineering side. And some things you might not know of him is Rodimo actually comes from an engineering background. So this tech AI question is right up his alley. And when he joined us more than 5 years ago, I was amazed around the ability and the willingness for the human side of investments to adopt the tech side. So I think this is greatly suited to him and the process he's adopted. And I guess the question is this whole interplay between the human and the machine or AI, specifically as it relates to the investment process and decision making. So what's your view around the two people? Some people are on one side of the fence where they say the machine will never be able to take over the decision making of the human. And on the other side, you've got the doomsday where AI is going to take all of our jobs. So from the investment process and decision making perspective, where do you sit, Radovan?
So I think I'll articulate my answer in a one sentence, and then I'll elaborate a bit on that. So AI is never going to take your fund management job. A smart fund manager using AI will take your fund management job. And I think the best analogy of that, or the best example of that, is the story of how freestyle chess developed. So back in the 60s, you could only enter a chess tournament as either a human or as a chess computer. And then the chess computers played against the humans, and eventually Deep Blue, chess computer by IBM, beat Garry Kasparov at chess. And that was thought to be the end of it. But then Garry Kasparov himself came up with this concept of freestyle chess, where humans were allowed to use a chess computer to help augment their decisions and help them analyze the chess board and the chess game. And what's interesting is that the very first of these freestyle chess tournaments was actually won by such a freestyle team. And the interesting thing is that if you looked at the rating of the human in that team, it was pretty average. And the computer in that team was pretty average. But the combination of man and machine is what turned that freestyle chess team into such a formidable team. So I think that's really where the future lies. I think the critical decisions are and will always have to be in the hands of humans, but the machines will abstract away a lot of the decision making and allow the humans to be more crystal clear in what decisions they need to be taking. And that should in the end be net positive for clients. I think one more thing maybe to add, just on you mentioned the rally in tech stocks in the US, mostly driven by AI and NVIDIA. I think the reality is that we should see that valuation gap between the tech companies, or the Magnificent Seven in the US, and the rest of the S&P 500 close down. And the reason for that is that valuation gap exists because of an assumption. And that assumption is that AI is going to dramatically improve productivity across the board, in society and in all of the businesses that embrace it. Now, that can either be true or it can be false. If it's false, then AI is a bubble, and we should see the AI bubble burst and the tech stocks valuation come down. But I think the more realistic reality is that we do see massive productivity gains by AI in the rest of the market, in the rest of the companies in the S&P 500, and those productivity gains should result in a re-rating of those companies to more expensive relative to the tech stocks, and so that the valuation gap between tech and the rest of the market has to close.
I fully agree with you, Radovan. If you just look at the earnings outlook into 2025 for US companies, that earnings growth differential between the Mag 7 and the rest of the S&P 500 has come in quite a lot and set to play out like you've outlined just now. We're going to end off with two quick fire questions, just one-liner answers required. The first one is, what do you believe will impact our equity markets most this year?
South African equity market, most probably Trump.
Perfect. And then the second one, what's your most controversial view this year?
Yeah, at similar lines, I think my controversial view is that Trump is like broccoli. You may not like it, but it's good for you.
That's a great analogy. Thanks, Radovan. All right, everybody, we're going to close off. So I think my key takeaway is, despite the challenging environment we find ourselves in, from a shrinking JSE, quite a tight balance that South Africa is sitting on from an economic outlook perspective, we still see significant opportunities to build a truly diversified bottom-up active equity portfolio that is capable of going through Very different market cycles. So with that, thank you for joining us, Rademe, and I would like to thank all the clients on the other side of this podcast listening to us. To find out more, speak to Stanlib Asset Management representative or visit stanlib.com. Thank you.